Now, how to switch from Mars to Saturn. Fortunately, Saturn is in Scorpio, so it's easier, isn't it? Now, I just want to say, I'm talking about something specific each time. You've reminded me of that, because if I was giving a day on something, I'd go many places, but because I'm giving an hour and a half, I go to one thing, you know, and that's what I'm talking about. But it doesn't mean that other things aren't terribly important as well about, let us say, Saturn now. But I think because Saturn is in Scorpio, I will be honing. I know myself. I hone on certain things. Isn't this a beautiful image of him?
Yeah.
I just love finding images that aren't the ordinary. I mean, I'm showing you a lot of the ordinary ones, too. But we're doing maybe three things. Images, antiquity of ancient, you know, of ancient images of... and then looking at a few charts, and then I'm doing something that I do full on for weekends now, for astrologers, but also non-astrologers now, in different places. And it's because Saturn is in Scorpio, and I feel quite passionate about how to use it, not to waste it, not to waste it. Use it. It's so hard that we might as well use it to find a way to do the work of transformation. You know, so... I'll show you my, not that I won't do the whole thing, but I'll give you an idea of how I'm working with it. So, again, just Saturn, the god, so beautiful. The ancient, you know, lion, wings, unusual. But, and again, he's Ninhurtu. Now the thing is, he's sort of mixed up with Nergal, who is the god of war in ancient Mesopotamia, and they mix them up for a while, and then they separate them. And I can't really understand it, because Saturn was such a different planet to Mars, so it's sort of interesting that they got mixed up together. But all of them started as far as I understand, as deities of the earth and the sky and the air and the ocean. In other words, they were part of the environment. And so they were all bits of different bits of environment, and then they got mixed up in different places. They were different things. So maybe that's why. This is a Ninhurta, and that's him, Ninhurta. Yeah. Very regal. This is Mesopotamia 3,000 to 5,000 years ago. Now this guy, I was using yesterday as Nergal, Mars, but he is also, again and again, said to be the Saturn god. So, I don't know. We'll get out of this mix in a minute. And then, of course, he becomes the Saturn we know in ancient Greece, where the story that describes something, I think of myth as describing something that's going on in a way that everybody can understand, okay? So something's going on and stories emerge, and then we call them myths. But actually they're just stories about what's happening and ways of describing confusing events and bringing them together and making meaning of them. So our Greek first connection with Kronos, who is the ancient Greek version that Saturn later becomes, the most powerful story is that he's afraid that one of his children is going to surpass him. So he does what you would naturally do. He eats all his children. You know, what is that about? And at some point he gets overthrown by Zeus, because his mother says, I've had enough of this, you know, trick it anyway, all of that. But this story that Saturn eats his children is very interesting. It goes on and on and on and on. It becomes the Roman Saturn. He eats his children too. And it's odd because there he is eating his children. This is him in Pompeii. Isn't that amazing? Maybe because some sympathy begins for him here in the first century AD. And there's something odd because the Saturnalia is also connected with Saturn in Rome, and it's a day where the servants and women take over from the men and masters, And there's this party, 3-day wild party, where everything is reversed. And never mind, and that's called the Saturnalia. And never mind that, Saturn has this mythic memory in Greece already, when he's Cronus, and then in Rome, that the time when Saturn ruled was the golden age. It was, and so it's very, it's never been quite resolved, which is good. I think when people resolve things, they shut it down and there's no more dreaming or thinking. So I have this thing lately that questions are better than answers. Answers locate something, and also they're always culturally or tribally or personally, that's the one I believe, you know? Whereas when you ask questions, it always is sort of in the realm of, and you get sort of understanding without answers. So the two, the strange double face of Saturn, you could say, is that on the one hand, there's this memory of a golden age where everything worked beautifully. And on the other hand, Saturn eats its children. So Saturn in our chart, I can see the golden age bit of it, because I have this sense, and this is through age, I wouldn't have said this 30 years ago, but I have, or 40 years ago, certainly wouldn't have said it, but this, when you get it right with Saturn, there is no satisfaction like it. I'm not talking Venus now, that's a whole other realm. And I'm not talking about the subliminal wildness of Mars, but I'm talking about when you decide you want something, you go after a goal and you do the work, the reward is instant. So that if you prepare something with all your heart, one way or another it will work out, and you get that satisfaction instantly. And that's Saturn. I learned that because about 20 years ago I had Saturn squaring my Sun and Moon for a whole year. And I went in, like everybody, when I lecture, I say, you mustn't do this. Of course, we all do it to each other. Oh, no, I just haven't squared my Sun and Moon. You do? Oh, God, we say to each other. And I said to my husband, do you believe this kind of square my Sun and Moon for a whole year? And he said, because he's more Saturnian than me, he said, I'll bet you at the end of the year, when that Jupiter aspect comes in, you'll say, I'm going to miss it. And I said, no way, you know. And a year had passed, and some of it was filled. I was very careful because I didn't want to be humiliated and hard, you know. And I was just frightened of that, of just humiliating myself. Or for a year, a Saturn aspect squaring. And at the end of it, as December came, I said, I do not believe it, but I actually feel that way. And recently, I had a client, and she's got lots of planets in Leo in the ninth. Sun and Moon conjunct Uranus in the ninth and Mercury, amazing chart. And Saturn squaring her on her ascendant, squaring that same for. And I said it's going to be a year. And she's been my client for 30 years. She said, yuck! And I said, I know, I'm really sorry. And then she said, and I said, let me tell you what Stephen said to me. And she said, yeah, right. She's, you know, all Leo for God's sake. It's not like she's something sort of civilized, you know. She's wild, fabulous. And I was on the phone with her because it's a fun thing we do now because she lives in another country. And she said, you're not going to believe it. At the end of the consultation, she phones every 2 months. And at the end of the consultation, she said, you're not going to believe this. You're not going to believe that you hear me say this. You've known me 30 years and I'm saying this. And I said, what? And she said, I'm going to miss it when it's gone. I said, you are? She said, I have developed things in myself I never, ever imagined. I have become... I never imagined I could become like this. And she went through hell, you know, and publicly, you know, being banished and slammed, and you know, when they do that troll you or whatever it is, you know, they savage you in public and they wipe you out. It was in her world, and she was accused of things that weren't true, and just, it was really heavy. And she said, I'm going to miss it. And I said, you'll probably enjoy Jupiter. She said, yeah, I'll enjoy Jupiter as well because it's coming up. And so I think that golden age thing is that when you practice your Saturn, the thing I was saying on the weekend, when you know enough about your Saturn to be able to practice it. I was saying that about Mars. I realize I'm saying it about Saturn now. But anyway, when you practice it, you give a bit to it. You don't go to the temple because we don't do that anymore. But you look at your Saturn, where it is and what it does, and you feed that a bit every day. It's a habit. And my friend, who I talk about all the time, and she's 94, and she says she's got Saturn and Virgo, opposition Uranus and Pisces, and she says, and she's known astrology since she was little, and she says again and again, it's Saturn. I suppose I've learned this from her. Of course I have. She says it's Saturn. She says, my Saturn in Virgo, and she lives alone still. She doesn't want to live with other people taking care of her. And it's hard, really hard for her to live alone because she's very frail, physically, not mentally. And she says, that Saturn in Virgo of mine, my God, does it. She said, I get up in the morning and I have to do three things, you know, do the, get dressed, get cleaned, get food, you know, all the stuff that we just do. And she said, my Saturn in Virgo is the one that knows how, and I've worked it all my life, and now it gives me back so much. Isn't that interesting? So that's why I think about it, about the Saturn and the Golden Age, that somehow, that if you dare to bring that kind of true discipline, not somebody else's version, into your life, you win something in the end. Because I did learn in that year, that's the year when it screwed my thing, I learned that if I worked it, the reward came like that. Whereas with Jupiter, whom I love, it comes or not. You know, it's up to other things. It's another level. It's another domain. So, and the eating of the children, well, we could go on that for a while. And if I think of anything interesting, I will say. Just images. Dark, always dark. Of all the dark, this is the darkest, isn't it? I mean, in some ways it's true. I mean, I can see the obvious thing that about eating as children, that it can make you so afraid of humiliation that you do not follow your heart and your creativity. And so if you really, when I was younger, people, I remember the generation that came to me, I just passed my Saturn return, first one. And lots of people were coming to me with their Saturn returns. I was probably about 10 years past, so I was about 40. And I kept hearing these people say, well, I just get the mortgage and then I'll go back to music. You know, I'll just have the child and then I'll go back to painting. And I remember thinking, oh, I'm not sure about that at all. You know, if they'd said, I have to give up painting because I need a child and a wife or a child and a husband better, then that's different. But I'll just give up this to do the Saturn and then I'll come back. So I still listen for it, I still notice it, but I remember then, I just passed my Saturn return, I'm still in Africa, I just remember thinking that's very dangerous. So I think with Saturn, the danger, and this is the exaltation in Libra, which I love so much, of all the exaltations, I think that's the one. I just want to get to, or I'll show you something else just now. Of all the exaltations, this is the one, it's in Libra. And either you let it suppress you because of fear, and it's different fear to Mars, it's not fear like that. It's fear always of, I think it's humiliation of some kind. Because Saturn is your interface between yourself and the world as well. Yourself and the community. It's exaltation and Libra. The balance between this and them. You know? So either you go one, you can go in, and never stays balanced for long. Nothing ever does. So either you go in the direction of being practical and keeping your head down and doing what's right according to the values of your culture in such a way that you actually lose your own ability to do something that in the end will give you the kind of recognition because it's yours. So you get proper recognition for it. It's yours. And for some, that is having seven children, no question. But for some who say, I've got someone very close to me and she said, I'll go back to my PhD when I have a child. I have to have a child and I'm going to stop my PhD, get a child, and then I go back. And I've watched. Now I'm about, my child is two, and now I'm, my, well, no, I can't quite yet. She'll get it in the end, I think, this one. But she'll have to work twice as hard. And maybe that's okay. So there's one way that you do what the culture and necessity and tradition tells you to do so much that you don't listen to yourself, whatever yourself is, but you know what I mean, that other voice. And the other is that you pay so little attention to what the world regards as valuable that you are not part of a community in any way. And I'm not talking about the Aquarian thing, because the Aquarian thing and the Iranian thing sits on the border of the village, town, polis. Sits on the wall. And it goes in and shares meat and water and salt, and then it gets back up and it goes out again. And it gets finds different foreign, strange deserts, and it comes back again, and then it goes in again. And that's the Iranian Aquarian way. It isn't rebellious when it's working. Let us say when it's working at its most excellent, it's not outsider and no acceptance inside. It knows that is where something needs to be brought in, and it finds ways to bring it in, but it has to go out again. So it can't stay fully in the convention. It has to leave and come back and leave. And with Saturn, if one does not do enough to listen to one's tribal mores, whatever, you know, tribal customs, and know how to at least say hello and goodbye properly, you know, say thank you and please, whatever it is, then there's a great, you can't accomplish anything. You may be famous for what you do later, but you don't get the satisfaction. And maybe for some people that's, you know, for Van Gogh that was clearly, he couldn't do it. And so some people have to do what they do, and they have to bring their Saturn to doing it, even if they give up the welcome that Saturn will give you from doing work well. It's so difficult, because every time I say something I can hear the other thing. Like sometimes by following, always it's about either not paying enough attention to the Saturnian realm or paying too much. That's basically what I'm saying. Not enough or not too much. I think this is true. I had such a discussion with friends of mine who live in the country, and she paints and doesn't want any recognition. And he writes and doesn't want any recognition. And I spent 5 years saying there, that's lying. I don't believe it. I can't believe it. I understand that they're brilliant, the two, brilliant, and maybe the thought of recognition stops them from being able to do what they do. That's possible. But we do things because we belong to a species, and we're part of the species. So, and the Saturn realm is such a strange space between, I would call, the transcendent realm and the perhaps earthly realm. I'm going to jump. Do you mind if I know it's Saturn, but I can't help it. I jumped. Okay. Yeah. Ruth, did you want to say something? You were just sort of.
So.
Yeah, okay. Yeah?
No, I want to say something about the eating the children, what I think it also means. And yeah. I think it has a lot to do with the idea of trying to control change. In other words, when you control things, when you control change, then you don't really have to face uncertainty as much, which is...
That's so Saturnian, that's really good. Yeah, that's
really practical. Really difficult to
yeah.
But what I think the actual lesson in the whole myth is that, as I think anybody here would agree, sooner or later we usually end up losing the battle for control.
Yeah.
But I think the more we've tried... The longer we've tried to control things that we probably shouldn't have, the worse the consequence.
Yes, and the more restrictive.
Almost,
exactly, know. That's lovely. And restrictive. And we get more and more restrictive, and that's true. I think I'd forgotten it because it was sort of something clear that I missed. Yeah, you're absolutely right. That we're trying to control the future as well, and trying to make everything as neat as it possibly can.
Because of that fear of the uncertainty of the unknown.
Exactly. And that's why my friend with Saturn in Virgo, opposition Uranus, she loves the opposition. Because she says she makes everything absolutely work. And then, of course, it goes chaotic and she goes crazy. She said, if it didn't go chaotic, I wouldn't be able to do Saturn again. Mm-hmm. And my Saturn, I need to do my Saturn. I'm 94. I need to do my Saturn. I am Saturn now. But thank God for the opposition in Pisces. You know, which smashes everything up. People arrive suddenly, and I haven't even, you know, it's a, I, and then she makes it work. So there is something, and she said, and she's always trying to control. We talk about it endlessly, and it's exactly, you're right, trying to control. Yeah.
And in former dictatorships, a lot of people look at the dictatorship time as a golden age when
everything worked.
Well, at least in imagine that's part of the Russian situation.
Absolutely. I was in Moscow last year, blissfully for 5 days. Blissfully because it was a birthday party and I got invited to a birthday party in Moscow. You can't go in a place better if that's the case. And I talked to everyone. I was fascinated growing up in America. You can imagine the communist thing and the Russian. We talked and talked and talked about that. And I lived in South Africa for 12 years. And when each of those regimes broke, the Russians told me about the chaos and thing that went around. And the old people said, I wish it went back. And when the South African one broke, the same thing happened. The person who worked for me said, I don't want black men ruling me. They'll make me have children now. White man doesn't care if I have children. In other words, it would be, they had a freedom for, now I think she loves it, that she's, you know, of course, she's got much more autonomy. But the fear that suddenly the people that would rule her, she knew what they were about. And these other guys ruling her, she can move around, do what she likes more. And I never thought of that. I was shocked. I said, of course you want it to end, for God's sake. And she said, I don't know, you know. And they all said that. And then I think people adapted. But old people get used to, they get institutionalized. You know? And that's Saturn. Anytime you've been in a hospital, anytime you work in a school, anytime you work in a corporation, you have to be Saturned. And you have to understand your own Saturn. So you understand when it starts getting really uncomfortable. We're going to talk about Saturn cycles on Thursday, 7, 14, 21. You know that whole thing? When Saturn squares and does all that? For now, I'm not going to do that. But when Saturn, when you're feeling oppressed and you're feeling held down by a rule, somebody else's rule or your own rule, a should. When you hear yourself say should, or when somebody else says should about you, I never have that happen, so, but I say should, you know. But some people have other people say should. They're bosses, I suppose. You should get that done by 5 o'clock, whatever it is. You're in Saturn's territory. And any difficulty that you have with it is Saturn, is some difficulty with your Saturn. So you either have to question, why are you doing this? And is it giving you the satisfaction and the recognition within your community that is normal, or is it not? And if it's not and you can't change, then you have to change your thinking about it. You have to find a way that it is satisfying your Saturn. Does that make sense so far-ish?
Yeah, so excuse me. So what you're saying is, because you need to own your Saturn at one point.
Yes, you have to become your own authority, your own...
Yes, but in relation to society, because we were talking about society.
Yes.
So at one point, the idea is, how do I fit best in the environment, in this environment, which is mine, which
yes.
I belong to.
Yes,
without getting it all the way to...
Yes, following other people's rules. How do I decide if this rule works for me? And if it doesn't, am I over-shoulding myself? Or am I allowing other people to should me? Or am I not shoulding myself enough? We could develop a new word. Shoulding, S-H-O-U-D-I-N-G. It could go viral if we... So it's that, if you recognize that you're operating from something that says should, or you're rebelling against something that says should, look at your Saturn. Pay attention to your Saturn.
On the different ways of doing that, there are certain rules within society.
Yeah.
If you like, the Ten Commandments, and just ways of living.
Yes. And Saturn is about that. They're always
Saturn
yeah.
is about
yeah.
adhering to that.
Yeah.
But then there are the moral codes as well, which change with time, that you then need to express.
And Pluto is in Capricorn now.
Yeah.
And has been since 2008, and Uranus is in Aries. Isn't that interesting?
It is, yeah.
vary. And because I work with those cycles all the time, every time Pluto is in Capricorn, the laws are rewritten. You know, and Pluto's been in Capricorn and Neptune in Pisces 6 times in the last 3,000 years. And they're really, I love the whole thing, you know, go back to each one. Last time, 1520 to 1534. And each time, but I started with 913, when Solomon's death, that's the first one, and everything and each time, it's as if each place has expanded, Pluto and Sag, enough so that everything's a bit chaotic and all the laws are rewritten and the customs reshaped and brought up to date. Badly or well, depending. And with Neptune and Pisces, something new is always coming in that you don't see until you look back hundreds of years later. But right now, it's so interesting because everything is being, the laws are because of the EU and Europe, you know, just everything. It got too expensive. And now everyone's trying, it's so Pluto in Capricorn. The system, Capricorn is the systems that contain us, you know, that contain the families, the Cancerian families. So it's the systems that hold us together. And with Saturn in Scorpio at the same time, at this particular moment, there's a crisis in each big system set off by some corruption that one person finds. Jimmy Savile's documentary was the night before Saturn went into Scorpio. The night before. And the BBC's been reeling ever since, constantly finding people that were corrupt in some way. So every system, while Saturn is in Scorpio, is undergoing some sort of really deep self-reflection, one way or another. So Saturn is, how do we say it like? It's the most over time, if you use it, it's the most comforting of all the planets. It, because when it operates, you just have to think, what are my rules? What am I doing that doesn't work for myself in the world? What is it that doesn't work for myself in the world? And some of us are introverts and some are extroverts. It doesn't mean you have to join the committees or anything. It just means in the world. Why is it that I'm not comfortable when I go to Sainsbury's, you know, I don't know, you know, or get on the tube, you know, or the world is very disturbed at the moment because it's undergoing a transformation. And your Saturn is the place where you can go, and working on it is a place of rest. It's a place of rest. Yeah?
I think Saturn comes down to Jupiter.
When Saturn's conjunct Jupiter.
My Saturn was conjunct Jupiter. Jamais content.
Jamais content. Because as soon as you go into one direction, the other one comes up. That's really lovely. Yeah. Let's look at something here. Oh, yes. Look at this. That's just so funny. God knows, it's in the V&A. It's a window in the V&A. And it says, the planet Saturn driving out a monk with a pig's head. Or, time-banishing melancholy. I mean, only the 17th century would do something that absurd. Isn't that strange? I think it's just really weird. Pig's head. Okay, but I'll show you something more, and then we'll look at that in different signs. That's, to me, classic Saturn. Melancholia. I was saying earlier today that I think depression is more often connected to Mars than it is to Saturn. And I know I've always thought it was connected to Saturn. But it is only if it has to do with your relationship with the world, with others. Whereas Mars is your relationship with yourself. You cannot get there. You don't know where to get. Your Mars doesn't have enough energy or power. Terrible, terrible depression. Not able to go for anything. Not able to go after your desires, let us say. But with Saturn, your relationship with the world isn't working. Doesn't work. That's a different thing. And melancholia is not a bad side of Saturn. Have any of you gone to Angela today, so far? I could have put Ficino's chart. I assumed everybody would have seen Ficino's chart by now. But he revised Saturn, which was a malefic. And then he said he had very strong Saturn and on his ascendant, and he was hunchback. And he did an extraordinary thing with Saturn. And he's 1433 to 1499. He's the first, he really revises all the planets in a way that nobody else does. Even if you go to her for one session. Please go to her for one session. And what he said was that when you were, when you had a strong, a heavy Saturn aspect, you had two choices. You could go wear dark colors and go into the room, which was dull, you know, dumb, and contemplate, become contemplative, contemplate life, go deeper into it, so that you would make the right balance back. Or you could go into Jupiter's room and play the lyre and wear white and sing, but you mustn't go into Venus's room. But then he thought Venus was like Diana. He thought Venus was, he had a funny relationship with Venus. But he said, these are the only two things you can do. And he, and so I actually think of that when I'm burdened with life. Oh, because Saturn is relentlessly, you know, I don't know if any of you like this, but it always stops at the degrees that I have in my chart and sits there for months and months. I mean, some planets do that, don't they? So, but when you're in a Saturn aspect, unless you do something that takes you deeper into the subject that is the most interesting to you, you can't do anything about it. You're stuck. It makes you stuck. Okay. Saturn, time, death, that's a whole other story. We'll see if we get there. This is wonderful. This is Eros, hope, and Venus consoling Saturn for his misery. And so I do think that there are times in a heavy Saturn time where you're so under a should, you have no choice. Your mother-in-law is ill, and she is in the house, and she's going to stay for months and months and months, or your niece has come, you know what I mean? Or the difficult son of your wife has arrived, and there's nothing you can do. She's going to stay for months and months and months, and it's really difficult. And no matter what else that is, that's a Saturn problem. So periodically, I do think you need something to console it. And so periodically, I would disagree with Ficino. I think sometimes you need to go out and drink a bottle of wine together. So, you know, in other words, you need secret ways of getting away from Saturn's grindingness. But when these things come, and you can't get rid of them, you have to live them. And you have to live them in a way that Saturn's in Libra, with grace, with some kind of grace. I love him, this one, but anyway. That's apparently a storm on Saturn. Doesn't it look baleful? His eye looks baleful. Okay, now. Okay, so we're... Okay, is this the right one? Yeah, okay. Saturn rules Capricorn and rules Aquarius, co-rules Aquarius. I always get this wrong. It's in detriment in Cancer and in Leo. Okay. It's in exaltation in Libra, and it's in fall in Aries. Now, when I was talking about Mars, I was saying how with Mars, I think it's almost, not better, but having a detriment or a fall in Mars, you have to work so much at it that you get a good chance of making it work. Whereas when it's in its own sign, it just does itself. You can almost be unconscious about it. And therefore not do the work of excellence that Mars requires. But with Saturn, it's slightly different. Saturn in Aries, okay, am I getting it right? Yeah. Saturn in Leo and Saturn in Cancer, it's almost like, I want to say it's almost like karmic. It's almost like it demands humility. It demands humility. Whereas with Saturn in Capricorn or Saturn in Aquarius, you probably can get away with lack of humility a bit. You don't get hit the same way. So it demands a greater, let us say, spiritual connection when it's not operating in its full strength. So it demands, I might say, it demands developing a sense of humor around it, around yourself. And it seems to me, with Saturn in Capricorn and Saturn in Aquarius, you almost can get away with not having that. Can you really? Can anyone get away with not having a sense of humor? Maybe not. I just remember at my first Saturn return being so powerfully aware that there were certain qualities that needed to be brought in at that point. But I don't want to talk about that yet. I'm going to talk about that tomorrow. So Saturn and Leo, it cannot get the feeling of satisfaction from its spectacularly beautiful work. I'm saying that because I've got two very close friends with it, very close people. Brilliant work beyond breath. Everyone knows it. And the difficulty of getting satisfaction, it's like it doesn't come in. So they have to get satisfaction from other parts of their life rather than from their creative extraordinariness. Isn't that interesting? It drives me crazy. And Saturn in Cancer, we were looking at Angelina Jolie with Saturn in Cancer. With all that, it's probably all that Mars. But how does she ever make her family safe? So you have to go somewhere else to get that kind of sense. You just have to keep working it and have humility around it. Maybe that's why she says, no matter what people think, I'm still a punk teenager with tattoos. It's her way of humility. One of the bravest people I've ever known had Saturn on the ascendant in Aries. And I only saw him fearful once, and it was just before he died. And he didn't know he was going to die. Neither of us knew he was going to die. And he went absolutely terrified. And I said, what is this? What's going on? And he said, I don't know, I've got this weird feeling. And I said, what? And he's seriously heroic in Africa. Seriously heroic. And I said, but what? How are you feeling? He said, I don't know. It's just weird. I mean, if I didn't, I think it might be fear. And I said, I remember saying, how would you know? You've never experienced fear. He said, I've never experienced this before. And then I realized it was fear. And I said, of what? And he said, I don't know. No idea. And then 3 weeks later, he died in the sea. Ten days later. But before that, he'd never had fear, and he had Saturn in Aries on the ascendant somehow. But he also never felt as if he did anything good enough. He never completely finished anything. He built beautiful houses and carved every door, but he only carved one side and didn't carve the other. And he said he'd do it later somehow. So he always did these amazing things. And he said, well, I heard him say once to somebody who thought he was extraordinary because he was so heroic, he said, no, I'm not really. I'm just a brave failure. You know? So there's something about with Saturn and Aries where the heroic thing, even the heroic thing doesn't quite feel quite like heroic. So he had a sense of humor about himself. And he felt fear only once. Anything about Mars in different signs? Hey? Pisces? I've heard too many things all at once coming from... Did somebody say Saturn and Pisces? Yes. Or not?
You said Mars. We were saying, do you mean Saturn?
Oh, really? I mean Saturn. Yes, I do. Have another cup of wine, darling.
A little sip of the tongue,
won't
you? It's funny because I was just about to say what a very mutual perception. What if you had Mars and Capricorn opposite Saturn?
Squared Saturn and Aries?
Yeah.
This person did, that I'm talking about. He had Mars and Capricorn in the 10th, squared Saturn and Aries on the ascendant. And when I was talking, I suddenly thought, that's why I thought Mars. Mm-hmm. That's why I said Mars, because I was looking at his chart. And I think that absolute radical courage was Saturn, with Mars and Capricorn. And the fact that it was squared Saturn in Aries, I think was the thing that he never quite finished everything, and he didn't finish the book that he was writing, and somebody else finished it after he died, and he could have done anything in Africa, and he never quite got to it somehow. So he was hugely heroic, and people followed him anywhere. He had a bushman that ran with him, he ran faster than the book, and he was astounding. And yet he had this sense of not being able to hold the accomplishments together in some way. But he had other qualities like sun conjunctivanus and Taurus, so he had a sense of humor about it. But it did drive him crazy as well. Yeah. Yeah. But it's a fabulous, I think it's an amazing aspect, that combination, because you really do things. But you have to have some kind of humility about yourself, and he did in the end. You know, he didn't look it, if he did, you know. If he met a man, I'd see him across the room, and if he met a man that was, you know, kind of like, I'm somebody, I'd see him do this. Literally, I'd see him do this at a cocktail party. And I'd think, oh, God! Starting, you know. And then if I saw a woman doing things with him, I'd see him going, oh no, I'm in trouble again. So I got to know that aspect very well. And when I came here, when I came to England, and I knew a lot of people in the bush with it, with that aspect, Saturn square mark. And when I came to London, every time I saw it in someone's chart, I think, what are you doing in a city? God, how do you do this aspect in a city? It would be so hard. And then, of course, they turned out to be people who were making companies and building, you know, things. But I couldn't imagine how you could do Saturn squared Mars in a city, because they built houses and they ran after animals and they shot their own food, and, you know, they used it really well. And then got completely polaxed by things as well. So someone else, Mars? Saturn? Sorry?
The people that were born in the 1966, the Saturn conjunct in Chiron in Pisces.
Opposition, Uranus conjunct Pluto. Yeah. Yeah, so Neptune and Scorpio. Yeah, I know. Poor people.
It's about Saturn in Pisces.
Oh, yes, that's lovely. I've got someone wonderful with Saturn in Pisces, who I'll show you. I know I tell this anecdote. I hate this, the thing you get older and do things enough, you tell stories again and again. But anyway, you do. And when your generation were old enough to be coming... No, but that generation. That generation. When it was old enough. They were coming to the CPA by then. You know, they were old enough and they were coming. And so I decided, I didn't know what it meant. What was this Uranus conjunct Pluto opposite the Chiron, you know, conjunct Pisces, when we were all getting stoned, basically, and traveling around the world? And so I called it Born in the 60s something, and I did a seminar on it just to find out. And everyone that came to the seminar was born in that period, between 64 and 68, all with that period. And at the end of it, John Green, I don't know if you know him, but he runs this stuff for the CPA, he said, at the end of the whole thing, he said, okay, so I told him what was going on in the 60s and everything. At the end, he said, okay, so I get it now. In that period, you guys had a party, and we were born to clean up. Fabulous. Because, and then as these people started coming to me, that generation, they seemed to be two, divided in two. They were either eco-warriors, or they didn't do anything except make money and have children and stay absolutely away from everything. And it was the generation that grew up. I grew up, water came out of the tap, and they grew up with bottles of water across the supermarket, and they'd have to choose which bottle they would have and couldn't drink it out of the tap. And everything had changed. And so it's a serious generation, and I think it is a hard generation to be in, because it demands that you fix the world. And there's no authority, Saturn and Pisces, that you can trust to fix it. And so how do you trust your own authority? I think it is difficult. There's this feeling you have to be in service, or you have to be, put your head down and just do things, practical, somehow. There's nothing you can do. And also what they said in that class as well, I'll never forget it because it was so powerful. It's hard to put your head above the parapet. One of the people said, Richard, his name was. And he said, you guys, you put your head above the parapet, but they weren't shooting at you. You know, you all sang songs and did, you know, ecology and everything, and then you just carried on having fun. We take it serious. It's terribly serious, somehow. And we can't fix it. It's unfixable, whatever it is, but we have to keep trying to fix it. And our aim is to transform it. But that depends. Oh, Saturn and Pisces isn't. Oh, please, I've got to show you the best chart in the world with Saturn and Pisces. Okay, I just want to say, close your eyes, because I don't want you to see all. Anyway. think I can do it. Okay, it's him. Pope Francis. He has a spectacular chart for a pope, Sagittarian. Would you want anything else for a pope? The high horse, high pulpit, conjunct Jupiter, ruler in Capricorn, knows how to play in the system, in the sixth house of service. And we've seen this again and again. Uranus on the midheaven, squared moon conjunct Venus in Aquarius. He still cooks his own food, you know? And he doesn't live in the popery or the Vatican or wherever it is. And he just goes into the street and brings people in for lunch. And he terrifies the community. You know, they're always having to apologize. Did you hear him when he said, it's not up to... But what do you think about homosexual marriages? And he said, it's not up to me to judge how people's sex lives. And the next day, with Vatican, what he meant was... Every time he says anything, they have to write pages and pages and pages in all the Catholic digests in the world to say he didn't really mean... And he just keeps going. But he is a Sagittarius with Jupiter in Capricorn. He is a proper pope. He's not going to change the thing. He's just going to jar it, go after what interests him. And he has Saturn in Pisces in the 8th house, on the cusp of the 9th, depending on the house system you're using in the 9th. And I think Saturn, I've got a lot of friends in that generation, of course, because a lot of them are astrologers now. And I think what it means is, and let's now use Saturn in terms of your authority figure. I think it is more probably associated with one's father, I don't know, sometimes one's mother maybe. But when you grow up in a world where you do not trust the authorities in front of you. So you don't trust, you only trust spiritual authority. If you sense somebody has true authority, absolutely spiritual authority, then you have to respect them. But if they have authority because of a position or a badge or a gown, or they've earned it through money, never, you won't trust them. So he won't trust anyone unless he really knows that they are absolutely true. Isn't that lovely? Yeah. So anyone who has Saturn in Pisces, that's the problem or the difficulty. You can't. And if it's conjunct Chiron, you can see the fakery everywhere. You know, you can see everyone who's pretending, and it's painful. But it doesn't mean that you won't have magnificently great people, because it's an outer planet. It depends on, you know, if you're connected to that, you will work it. So it's, I don't think it's more painful. I think it's probably not as much fun to be of that generation as it was of mine. However, my generation's having a harder time now, because we weren't built to take care of ourselves when we got old, you know, so everybody has trouble. All right, let me show you. This is Thomas Hobbes, and his Saturn was in Taurus, conjunct Venus. Ignore the Chiron, I'm sorry about that, I should have taken it out. But it was in Taurus, conjunct Venus. And he's the one who said, life is nasty, brutish, and short. That was his philosophy. Doesn't he look like he'd say that? Hey?
And fear is the greatest human passion.
And fear. Did he say that?
Yeah, fear of violent death. And that's why we should have a sovereign state to alleviate our fear of violent death.
Wow, well, that's amazing. And look at this. Mercury conjunct Mars and Aries, squared to Neptune and the Moon. Well, we don't know. This is a dawn chart. But Neptune for sure. How old was he when he died, I wonder? I want to tell, I used her this morning, or yesterday, someday, yesterday, because of this. Do you know who she is, Aung San Suu Kyi? She's having a hard time at the moment, you know. She really is. It's not as easy as she thought. I mean, you know, you almost think she should be able to have what she struggled so for so long. Like Nelson Mandela, he just got it. But what I'm interested in is her Saturn in Cancer and squared to the Moon. And she and sextile Venus, and she said to her husband when she was in Cambridge, she was sent by her general father and mother, you know, they were political, big political people, and they sent her to Cambridge because she was so bright. And she fell in love with a man and married him and had two sons. And they had a really lovely time. They had a really but she said to him before she got married to him, if my country needs me, I will leave you. You have to accept that. And he said, okay. And it wasn't her country, it was her mother. Her mother got ill. I think after 10 years, was it 10? I mean, the children were still very young, weren't they? And so she went back, and she was never allowed to leave again. And she was put under house arrest for 15 years or whatever it was. Yeah. But her choice, it was, and that's, I recently realized, I think I never understood how strong Saturn in Cancer is. Because the sense that you have to take care of those who are yours is so powerful. But look at the choice she had, either her country or her family. And she left her family. And when her husband was dying of cancer, she asked if she could go. And they said yes. And she knew they'd never let her back in, and she didn't go. And one of her sons has forgiven her and is there on her side, and the other one hasn't. Very painful. She said, I was a prisoner, but I always felt free because I was not frightened. So for me, real freedom is freedom from fear. And she said every single political exile who had been put in prison or under house arrest agreed with her that you were no longer afraid of anything because you had decided to give your life up for your convictions. And that was the most powerful thing you could do, so nothing could make you afraid again. I can't even understand that from anywhere in my being. Well, I wanted to show you him. He's got Saturn in Scorpio, conjunct Venus. And it's squared to Jupiter conjunct Pluto in the second house. And he's made a lot of money. And he was completely introverted and a nerd beyond breath until he met her. And I've been amazed at what's happened to him. Her Saturn is at 2 Aries. And it conjuncts his moon and opposes his Mars, kind of. But I'm going to, again, I'll look at that when I look at this thing tomorrow. Hey?
You have her born in 1996?
What? Oh, no, that's wrong. Oh, no. Sorry. No, sorry. I do that because what I'm doing is repeating the thing on the side. If you want your date, well, you can look it up. No, sorry. But it's interesting. For some reason, what I'm interested in is he's got Venus conjunct Saturn and in Scorpio. And when he met the woman of his dreams, they seem to have a very good relationship. His life started. I love things like that. He was transformed. I have a young friend who has Venus conjunct Saturn. I think he's 30 this year. And I watched him go through his teenage years and his early 20s. It was really tormenting to watch him. He has it in the ascendant. It was just so awful. And then he met this woman. And the transformation is breathtaking. So it's just surprising, isn't it? You would not expect that. Somehow. And it's quite beautiful. Okay. Now. Sorry?
Who is the girl with
the date?
Her?
His wife. Oh, sorry, his daughter. Sorry. Oh, that's what you were saying. That's what's wrong. Sorry, yes, that's his daughter. Oh, man. Definitely, I've been working too much. I'm glad I have a day off tomorrow. No, sorry, it's his daughter. Yes. So when he married, what's her name, Belinda? What is it? Yeah. When he married her and had his child, that's when he changed. He began to change when he had her, when he married her. And something started coming out a bit more. He got a bit more secure. And then he had her. And this, in Placidus, is on it's in the fifth house. And it's on the cusp of the fifth house here. Sorry, that's what I meant. Hey?
Why wouldn't it change?
Exactly. Yeah. No, absolutely. She has a very rich father.
But can you see it on
their
chart?
That she has a rich father. That's interesting. I mean, that's an interesting question. No, what I see is that she has a father who's very connected to other people, Mars and Aries, squared Neptune, and either romantic about life or deluded and gets disillusioned with people. I'm sure that's true because I'm sure he's used so much. And that he's in some sort of service. He's very controversial. I know people who adore him because he's made their life possible. You know, schools and hospitals, an unbelievable amount of charity. And I know people who say it's all corrupt. He's corrupt. I have no idea.
Well, he has said he's not leaving any of his money to his kids.
He's not leaving any of his money?
No,
to who?
He is.
Yeah, he said he doesn't want his children ruined.
He is. That's what I was going to say. That's interesting. Is actually, if you were to put that in equal, that would put the moon in the. Never mind. Ignore that part. But what I was going to say is, they famously, like, you know, he's worth $40 billion.
Yeah, billion.
And that he was only going to leave 10 only.
Yeah, that's
only going to leave 10% of that to his kids, and the rest was all already allocated.
Absolutely.
To all the charities. And his kids were absolutely fine with that.
Yeah, and his kids were absolutely fine with that. And that's what's interesting, because. He's taught them how to make their way in the world. The two of them have taught them. How, no, 1996, this is what. Oh, God. Anyway, I'll wake up in the middle of the night about that thing. 1996, that was fine. No, but I think that's fascinating that he's done that. And his kids are okay with it. But I mean 10% of whatever it is. You know, it's probably okay. But there are people who would... But there are people who would hold resentment forever because their father didn't leave them. I mean, I've known so many people who go insane over that, you know, who absolutely cannot bear it. Okay. I want to show you this. Okay. This I know. I'm going to stand up again, because obviously when I sit down, I can't quite do this. Anyway, okay. A way of working while Saturn is in Scorpio. And it is, I'm joining the two, Saturn and Mars, and it is a way of working with Mars. And it's only there for a short time now. But when Saturn first went into Scorpio, I was in Corfu, and I walked into the one rather empty museum in Corfu, and there was Medusa. Huge! And I thought, Saturn in Scorpio, that's it. And so I've done it 1,000 times, so I'm not going to do the whole thing here, but it's Saturn in Scorpio. It's the way of working with it, because it's such a pain, Saturn in Scorpio. I don't know. You know, it's hard. It's hard. But there's a way of working at it. So what happens is she runs into the Medusa, is one of, it's ridiculous, she's one of three sisters. The other two are immortal, she's mortal. The other two are monsters, she's pretty. She's got great hair. She brags about it, they say. She's chased by Poseidon, who fancies her, Neptune and Pisces, so perfect, and into Athena's temple. And Athena goes crazy. And for some reason, punishes her rather than says anything to Poseidon. There are many things you can think about that. And turns her into a monster. Into such a monster that all you have to do is look at her and you turn to stone. And she runs away to the other side of the universe, right? Like that. Meanwhile, in another part of the world, a young woman has been put in a dungeon because her father has been told that if she has a child, it's going to kill him. And she's put in this tower or dungeon. And Zeus is passing by and sees her and slips through the cracks in the grill at the top of the tower as a shower of gold, as you would if you wanted to seduce a woman in a dungeon. She gets pregnant. Her father finds out, and he puts her in a boat and with the either the child or the pregnancy, and sends her out to sea. She arrives on an island with the child and is picked up by a fisherman and taken care of. The fisherman has a brother who's king. The king finds out about this Danae woman and really fancies her, but doesn't do anything about it because the fisherman is tough. You know? Dictates his name is. the king of Polydictes. He grows up, and Polydictes invites him to a party with all the other young men, and they all compete to impress him because the daughter is being married off, and so all the men are going, I'll bring you a great gift. And he tricks him, Perseus, into offering anything Polydictes wants. Polydictes says the head of Medusa. And he says, sure, because he's 15, and Mars isn't shot down because he lives in a bubble wrap world, you know? He can go off and kill something to show who he is. So he rushes off, but he's seen by Athena, which is really interesting since she's... Anyway, he's seen by Athena, who has Hermes give him winged sandals and Hades a cap of invisibility, and she gives him a shield. And she says, when you find her, look at her through the shield, the mirror. Don't look straight at her, because you'll turn to stone. Look at her in the reflection. And he goes off and he finds where she is through various stories. And he gets there, he looks, and he goes through all their, they're in some cave somewhere, and he goes through all the stone statues, men tried, wandered by, and he looks in the shield and he cuts off her head. And he picks up the head and he puts it in the sack that Athena also gave him, and he flies home with the winged sandals, and he makes himself invisible because the other two sisters are after him. And on his way home, he looks down, and there is a damsel. The Pre-Raphaelites loved this, but everybody has. If you put Andromache and Perseus in Google, you get images of chained naked to a rock in the ocean, as happens. Her mother has bragged about her daughter's hair, and Asima or something about her beauty, and Asima. Cetus has gotten jealous, and a sea monster, and she said to her sea monster husband, go kill her. Anyway, you know, one of those stories. And he sees her, and he stops, and he goes down, and he puts the head in the sack on the ground, and coral appears. So coral comes from this, you know, because everything it touches, it turns to stone or marble or coral. So he rescues her, and then he says he's going to marry her and take her off. But he has to go and see Athena first. So he goes to Athena, and he gives Athena the head. And Athena takes two drops of blood and gives them to Asclepius, the healer god. The healer, not god, the healer person. And Asclepius, one of them is to heal, and the other is to kill those who cannot be healed. And a whole thing happens with him. Hades gets really furious because nobody's going down to Hades anymore, and so he, anyway, that happens. The healer uses the blood of Medusa, and then she takes the head and puts it on her aegis, her skin that Zeus gave her. And I think that's a question forever. I love it. Why did she do that? Scholars have said why again and again, and I've never read anything that impressed me. Why does she do that? She's a goddess. The closest thing I can think of is that if you look at her when she's young, she's got owls around her, but if you look at her when she's older, she's got this. And I think she is saying something, be aware, be fearful, fear me. Because she's the other goddess of war, but she's wise strategy, and she's someone you want on your side. But you can't get her on your side unless you know how to deal with your Mars. Because she does not respect people who just get angry just because they feel like it, who kill just because they feel like it, who throw people out, who get rid of people, or who retreat from war. She only helps those who have a strong vitality, Mars, strength, courage, who turn fear into courage. And she wears that forever. So what I am saying with Saturn and Scorpio, it's only there for a short time, but we can still do it. It comes back a little bit next year. I'm saying to make yourself fit for the world, because the world has changed, you know. It is. That's it. You can't complain about it anymore. It's enough complaining. It's enough blaming people. Cameron and this one and that one. If only they did this and the NHL. Oh, it's changed. And it continues to change. And it may change in wonderful ways, but also ways that are harder than it has been, okay. So while it's still there, and it's, I mean, Mars is in Scorpio at the moment, is there a way that each time you find yourself reacting, it's the same reaction, every time someone does this, I'm bringing Mars and Saturn together now, every time someone does this, you react that way. You either get hurt and retreat, or you attack one way or another. Can you pause and reflect for a moment? Don't look straight at it, but back off and just reflect. And I think what I have found, because I've been working with it now, you know, since October of, well, since April, I mean, it was, let's say October of 2012. Can you just reflect enough so over time, when you react, you notice it just like that? And over time, as you react, this I don't know. I do know reacting and noticing and being able to stop it. I haven't got to the point where it rises and I notice it before, you know. But I can react and then say, stupid, sorry, you know. And retreat and say, don't do that, don't retreat, come back out, say something, come back out. Because if you reflect over time, wise counsel, that's who Athena is, she's wise counsel, attends you. And something happens inside where the battle of life becomes something that is not something you're more afraid of than anything, therefore everything must go back to the way it was before. Do you see what I'm saying? It's very important when Saturn's in Scorpio, in mutual, what's it called? Mutual
reception.
Mutual, I was going to say, relate with Pluto in Capricorn. Anyone who has some sort of attention to the way they move in the world, rather than thinking the world is wrong, and if only they did what I thought they should. I mean, that's such an automatic reaction in England. You can't imagine. We all do it endlessly. It's so tedious, really. And I do it too. I mean, I'm not talking about other people. So, is there a way to use the rest of Saturn and Scorpio each time you notice yourself going into this automatic anger or retreat, let's say, simplify it, you know, anger or retreat, is there a way of just reflecting so that over time you have, you turn your reactions into responses? They're responses to life's obstacles rather than reactions to life's obstacles. It seems to me a really good piece of work, and it seems to me the essence of using your chart to navigate by your chart. You know. So, I might end early, if you don't mind, because I never end late, and I might end early. But if you have questions, I won't. I might want to end with this. Okay. One of the things that I noticed, that we noticed, maybe Stephen and I noticed, I don't know, I must have noticed, somebody noticed it, and I just, at the beginning, was with Saturn and Scorpio, there are lots of elephants in the room. Everywhere you go, there's an elephant in the room. So, I found these three things. This one says, I'm right there in the room and no one ever acknowledges me. This one says, no, this is the elephant. And this one says, honestly, I preferred it when we didn't talk about the elephant. I just love them. And I suppose I'll end that image, throw up that image actually. And, no, maybe you can see better that one. And what I'm talking about is, because Saturn is in Scorpio, there's so much going on beneath the surface, all of us, you know. And I would just say, notice when there are elephants in the room, because it's more fun than all the other stuff you have to do. And, you know, you're having dinner with people and everything, but they leave and you think, we never did speak about that thing, and that really was the thing that was underneath the whole time. And I think they're more noticeable with Saturn and Scorpio than they have been in a while. So, you can, I don't think, the three cartoons say, I don't think you can do anything about them. You can with somebody that you trust totally, you know, your other, if you have an other, or you have a best, or you have somebody fundamentally that is your trusted, then you can deal with the elephants. But dealing with the elephants with people, that's not true. It's very, betrayal is a huge thing with Saturn in Scorpio at the moment. So it's something that has to be attended and cared for, I think. But with somebody that you're intimate with, if you don't deal with the elephants, they get bigger and bigger and bigger. I mean, now, because I've lectured on it so much, people will come up to me and say, well, we were there and everything. And I cannot tell you, you couldn't move for elephants, really. It wasn't possible to move out of the room because there were so many elephants. So just be aware of them. And they're the things that are somewhere under the surface that are still painful, not quite resolved. You may not be able to do anything about them in yourself or in the other. You have to be patient somehow, but it's a period where you reflect just a bit. What part am I of this elephant? What do I have to do with this elephant? Is this my elephant? A friend of mine, somebody who became a friend in the last few years, he said, I was doing a whole weekend on it and everything, and he came up, and he'd been a monk for years and years, and he came up and he said, do you think it's good to give peanuts to the elephant? And I said, yeah, maybe. And he said, yeah, that's what I thought. And he went away, and I have no idea what he meant. He was a monk, you know. So he must know something very profound. And he thought I was profound enough to know what he meant. But I said, Gemini, so I would carry on any conversation. I keep thinking, God, I hope he comes again next year. Because I do this weekend somewhere every January. And I hope he comes next year so I can find a way to ask him what he meant. He was a Scorpio as well. So we've got about 15 minutes, but I'm going to stop unless anyone wants to say anything with you. Because I've only talked about certain things, and I probably haven't talked about the most important thing. And I'm happy to.
I just quite lighthearted, but just on the subject of humor. There's a few people I've known in my life who either have who are either Capricorns or have a very strong Saturn thing. And then the people who have become comfortable with the sort of grace of the inevitability, and aren't fighting it anymore.
Grace of inevitability. There's another good sentiment. I like that.
And they have the most wonderful, they have the most wonderful sense of humor.
Yes.
Very dry.
Dry and dry.
And if anybody else, the timing is so perfect, it'll be when I'm going through something.
Yes.
And I'll talk to them, and they just know exactly the right timing to make a dirty joke, or really inappropriate joke. Like, if anybody else said it, it'll be and it'll be something about, oh, well, at least you're not dead, or, something along those lines. And it just immediately
frees it up.
So, what am I worrying about? It's just something. It's going to happen whether I'm worried about it or not. Yeah. And that's something I really appreciate about the sort of Saturn Capricorn energy.
Absolutely. And there's something else that Saturn, I keep thinking of things that I know I'll think of later and want to gather everyone back, send notes out, come back first. For me, Saturn's about mastery. How could I not say that? Saturn's about mastery. And it's you start out on your knees. But if you work with your Saturn and you understand it enough to work with it and recognize when somebody else is making your Saturn, they become your Saturn, you're projecting it or something, you fall on your knees again and again, and you fail again and again. But over time, the failure turns into mastery. And if you do something long enough, and it really is over time, and you're willing to do it over and over again, you gain a mastery. And mastery doesn't mean that you do it perfectly all the time, but it means something. It means that you've owned it all the way in, all the way down through your being. Yeah. And you're right, I'm going back to the thing, if I go back to this exaltation in Libra, it's about control, too much control on the one side, and not enough, too much making life work the way you think it should, and not enough life working the way it should. And I think I agree. I think in the middle of it, there is something, that some humor about yourself, something that knows how to laugh at life in that dark way. Is such Saturnian humor.
Yes.
Exactly. And it brings it just back. Yeah. It brings a grace.
I have a chart of people that have the Saturn in water sign, like Pisces or Scorpio,
Cancer,
and they don't like to deal with their feelings.
They don't like to deal with their feelings?
To deal
with their feelings?
And feel. They have a lot of emotional fear which they don't want to deal with.
Yes, I'm sure that's true. And the ones who attain mastery dare to deal with them. And the ones who don't, don't.
How can you convince them to do that?
You tell them they should. Yes, oh, that's a better question. As an astrologer, now she's got me. As an astrologer,
you
want to do that.
You said Mars in, don't you?
Did I?
You send Mars in.
You mean you whack them on the head? Deal with your feelings, Bozo. If you're related to them, or in an intimate, one of the things I learned when I was young, I was an astrologer before I was, you know, I was an astrologer quite young. And as a living, I mean, you know, started very young and fell into it in my 20s before my Saturn return. And I remember making a decision that I would never be the astrologer for my lover or the psychologist. I have degrees in psychology, philosophy, theology, things like that. And I realized that, because at first I tried to do that, you know, every single, it was the 60s, you know, so every single, oh, you're really relaxed. And I realized that when I was with someone, it mattered. I must never do that. And so I realized over time that my family is not the people that I can do that for. There's nothing I can do. I can do it for clients. I can say anything. So if you're talking about clients, then you say this. You feel there's a sense of humiliation about having these feelings. It's like humiliation. It's too humiliating to admit your feelings. That could be a dangerous position. It's worth considering that working on expressing your feelings may be a way towards coming to terms with life. Otherwise, you're locked up. So it's something like that. But if you're dealing with a child or a husband, you have to be very careful. You know, if it's an intimate person. And my experience is with intimate people, you say things very casually. You know, you just say, and the person's going, you know, no, I'm fine. You know, and you know they're not. You just absolutely know they're not. No, everything's fine. I know someone so well with Saturn Cancer. I mean, we laugh. I mean, her sort of default position is, I'm fine. And it's so funny. You know, she's like, are you okay? No, I'm fine. I mean, really, really, literally like that. We all, and she gets angry, you know. She has Mars on the ascendant and Leo, so she gets pissed off with you. She looks so, you know, and everything. So the only thing I could ever do, I'm actually going to take my advice, I'm just here. The only thing you could ever do is say, oh, it's really interesting, you have Saturn and Cancer. Well, we all have trouble with something, and I suppose Saturn and Cancer have troubles with expressing their feelings. Walk out of the room. But when you're dealing with a person, you can say the way towards mastery in life has to do with the ability to learn to face the humiliation of daring to express feelings that are humiliating for you. Yeah, I think that's a really good, thank you. You've given me a really good clue about how to deal with this person. But also, another friend of mine has Saturn in Scorpio, and I agree with you. I said, you know, it's a problem of envy. And she said, I've never been envious of anyone. And I thought, what? You're a human being? How can anyone say I've never been envious? You know, so human is envy. You know, it's one of the most common human things, envy and jealousy. You learn to spot them in yourself. That's fine. Why shouldn't you spot them? But Saturn and Scorpio, I'm envious? No way. Really good. Yeah, exactly. Seriously depressed. So I'm thinking about Pope Francis. You know, he's got a great sense of humor, but he's got Saturn and Pisces. So I imagine because you can see his independence. He's frightened of being corralled. You know, he doesn't want to eat in the Vatican. A friend of mine said, he's not very sympathetic to the Catholic thing, and I'm like, you know, sort of thing. And he said, I think he's afraid of being poisoned, actually. I know, I thought, oh, but it must be fear of weakness. And now I'm thinking of all the people. I put charts up in my head with people, and I'm thinking of all the people I know with Saturn and Pisces. To admit that you're frail and weak and foolish must be very difficult if you have Saturn and Pisces, that you're helpless, you know. Saturn and Gemini, to admit that you're stupid, you know, really hard. And yet the people who Saturn in Gemini who admit that they're stupid are so much smarter than the people who think they're smart, need to be smart.
Uh-huh.
So there's a point when Saturn comes where you can't admit something, you know. Saturn in Sagittarius, to admit you don't know anything, really, basically. I mean, I had one of my closest friends in the world. She died years ago because she got quite old, on Patmos. And she had Saturn in Sagittarius, and I once said to her, it would have been such fun to know each other if we'd both been young together, you know. She was 30 years older than me or something. She said, no, no, no. And I said, why? And she said, you would have disliked me intensely. I said, I would have? I don't dislike people. She said, you would have disliked me. I said, why? She said, I was a know-it-all. And I said, you're not now. She said, I am sometimes, but I don't do it with you. And she had it in the fourth, you know. And so what I loved about her is she gained the wisdom. And she said, I don't have to know everything now. So, and Saturn and Gemini, you have to always have a sentence to answer, you know. Saturn and Aries, you have to always be brave, you know. Saturn and Leo, you have to be. It's the detriments and the falls are they're harder because you have to say I can't be. I can't. Yeah.
What if Saturn is not connected to your chart? Unexpected.
Unexpected.
Yes.
How interesting.
How do you connect to that mastery?
Whoa. I love this place. I love the questions. I have no idea. The only thing I think that's really interesting, no aspects to that. That's really, well, maybe you use tighter aspects. I use very wide aspects, of course. Because in America in the 60s, we used 12 degrees.
No, I'm talking about a true unexpected.
No, you are. I gather. I'm trying to think and babble at the same time. No, don't fight that. The only thing I can think of, you go to the house, but the only thing I'm just thinking of all unaspected planets, and I'm going to that space. And my experience of unaspected planets is like having somebody live in the attic, and you don't go there very often, but there's a feeling of that one there, and periodically it acts very strongly, and then it's silent again. So it's almost like you have to go there. It doesn't take you there. You're not taken there, I assume. You know, so you go there, you say, my master lives in the attic, and I go, in the basement or wherever, and I go to the place of mastery. You know. Because with other things, you have no choice. You experience humiliation, and if you dare to admit it, and maybe that's the difficulty with the water, isn't it? Yeah. If you dare to admit, you just felt so humiliated, you know, then you're able to know where you're seeking mastery, you know, somehow. Mm. Yeah.
So it's a conscious act.
Absolutely.
That you make.
A conscious act. Mm. That you go there. Like going to visit a master.
Yeah. Well, the transits help as well because
they say, by the way, come to, you know. Yeah. Yeah. They call you. Yeah. And somebody, you said Saturn in Virgo?
Yeah.
My friend Eliza has Saturn in Virgo, the one who's 94, and she's the one who said it's the best thing in the entire world. And Obama has Mars in Virgo, trying Saturn in Capricorn. It's so simple in that way, you know? It just means, it's such a beautiful position for achieving mastery, but it's hard because there's a description, I'll just say that and then I'll stop. There's a description in the it was in a concentration camp and they did all this stuff and never mind that, sorry, come back out. Okay. These guys, these rabbis were all together and they needed to choose a leader amongst them in a very difficult circumstance. It was in a concentration. And they couldn't choose amongst them who it would be. They just couldn't. And then as they left the room, one of them knelt down, or he bent down and he tied his shoelace. And all of them just watched. And then he stood up and he walked out and they said, no, 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 come back, you, it's you. Because of the attention that he brought to it. And then they realized he brought attention to all sorts of small things that way. Like when he gave, like I would say with Saturn and Virgo, when she gives me a cup of tea, it's hard for her to make the tea. She insists on making it. It drives me crazy. I can make it in a minute. But she puts it down. She puts the cup down. She gets the spoon. She blends it, the whole thing. And it's like a Japanese ritual. Saturn and Virgo. Really nice Saturn. Very clear. Very difficult to come back. You know.
But you have to get things right with Saturn.
Absolutely. Not everything, not the big things.
But you wish you could.
Well, but that's the problem with Saturn. You're never going to... The reason when you find mastery, you discover you're never going to get it right, so you just do it long enough. I've got to stop. If I don't stop, I'll die. I don't want to know. I don't know. I should.
That's very quick. And the challenge is I get things right, because 1 plus 1 equals 2, 2 plus 2 equals 4.
Yes.
It's a very finite way of checking that you get things right.
Yes.
In astrology, I have real trouble because there are at least two, if not, but there are more house systems.
Yes. You can tell me. Okay.
Thank you.